This is Audible.
Listening Library presents The Copper Gauntlet, Book 2 of Magisterium by Holly Black and Cassandra Clare. Read for you by Paul Bamer. Chapter 1. Call removed a small circle of oily pepperoni from his slice of pizza and slid his hand under the table. Immediately, he felt a wash of Havoc's wet tongue as the chaos-ridden wolf inhaled the food.
"Don't feed that thing," his father said gruffly. "It's going to bite your hand clean off one of these days."
Call petted Havoc's head, ignoring his dad. Lately, Alistair wasn't happy with Call. He didn't want to hear about his time at the Magisterium. He hated that Call had been picked as an apprentice by Rufus, Alistair's former master. And he'd been ready to tear out his hair ever since Call had come home with a chaos-ridden wolf. For Call's whole life, it had been just him and his father's stories about how evil his former school was, the same school that Call now attended, despite Call's hardest efforts to not get admitted. Call expected his father to be angry when he had gotten back from his first year of the Magisterium, but he hadn't anticipated how it would feel to have his father so angry. They used to get along so effortlessly. Now everything felt strained. Call hoped this was just because of the Magisterium. But the other option was that Alistair knew Call was secretly evil. The whole being secretly evil thing distressed Call, too. A lot. He'd started making a list in his head. Any evidence of him being an evil overlord went into one column, and any evidence against it went into another. He'd taken to referring to the list before making any and all decisions. Would an evil overlord drink the last cup of coffee in the pot? Which book would an evil overlord take out from the library? Was dressing in all black a definite evil overlord move or a legitimate choice on laundry day? The worst part was that he was pretty sure his father was playing the same game, totaling and retotaling Call's evil overlord points whenever he looked in Call's direction. But Alistair could merely suspect. He couldn't be sure. There were some things only Call knew. Call couldn't stop thinking about what Master Joseph had told him, that he, Callum Hunt, possessed the soul of the enemy of death. That he was the enemy of death, destined for evil. Even in the cozy, yellow-painted kitchen where he and his dad had eaten thousands of meals together, the words rang in Call's ears.
"The soul of Callum Hunt is dead. Forced from your body, that soul shriveled up and died. Constantine Madden's soul has taken root and grown, newborn and intact. Since then, his followers have labored to make it seem like he wasn't gone from the world so that you would be safe."
"Call?" his father asked, staring at him oddly. "Don't look at me," Call wanted to say. And at the same time he wanted to ask, "What do you see when you look?" He and Alistair were splitting Call's favorite pizza, pepperoni and pineapple. And ordinarily they would have been chatting about Call's latest escapade in town, or whatever fix-it project Alistair was currently working on in his garage. But Alistair wasn't talking now, and Call couldn't think of anything to say. He missed his best friends, Aaron and Tamara, but he couldn't talk about them in front of his father, because they were part of the world of magic that Alistair hated. Call slid off his chair. "Can I go out in the backyard with Havoc?" Alistair frowned down at the wolf, a once adorable pup that had now grown into a rangy teenage monster, taking up a lot of the real estate underneath the table. The wolf looked up at Cole's dad with chaos-ridden eyes, tongue lolling from his mouth. He whined gently.
"Very well," said Alistair with a long-suffering sigh. "But don't be long. And keep away from people. Our best bet of keeping the neighbors from making a fuss is to control the circumstances under which Havoc is seen."
Havoc jumped up, toenails clacking over the linoleum as he made for the door. Cole grinned. He knew that having the rare devotion of a chaos-ridden beast counted for a lot of evil overlord points, but he couldn't regret keeping him. Of course, that was probably a problem with being an evil overlord. You didn't regret the right things. Cole tried not to think about it as he stepped outside. It was a warm summer afternoon. The backyard was full of thick, green, overgrown grass. Alistair wasn't very meticulous about keeping it trimmed, being the sort of person who was more interested in keeping the neighbors away than sharing lawn mowing tips. Cole amused himself by throwing a stick to Havoc and having him retrieve it, tail wagging, eyes sparkling. He would have run alongside Havoc if he could have, but his damaged leg kept him from moving too fast. Havoc seemed to understand this, and rarely scampered too far out of reach. After Havoc had done some fetching, they crossed the street together toward a stretch of park, and Havoc ran off toward some bushes. Cole checked his pockets for plastic bags. Evil overlords definitely didn't clean up after their own dogs, so each walk counted as a mark in the good column.
Cole?
Cole spun around, surprised. He was even more surprised when he saw who was speaking to him. Kylie Miles's blonde hair was pulled back by two unicorn clips, and she was holding on to a pink leash. On the other end of it was what appeared to be a small white wig, but might have been a dog.
You, Cole said. You know my name?
I feel like I haven't seen you around lately,
Kylie replied, apparently deciding to ignore his confusion. She pitched her voice low.
Did you transfer? To the ballet school?
Cole was seized by hesitation. Kylie had been with him at the Iron Trial, the entrance exam for the Magisterium. But he had passed, and she had failed. She'd been removed to another room by the mages, and he hadn't seen her since. She clearly remembered Cole, since she was looking at him with a puzzled expression, but he wasn't sure exactly what she thought had happened to him. Her memories had certainly been altered before she'd been released back into the general population. For a wild moment, he imagined telling her everything, telling her how they'd been trying out for a magic school and not a ballet school, and how Master Rufus had picked him, even though he'd scored way worse than she had. Would she believe him if he told her about what the school was like and what it felt like to be able to shape fire in his hands or fly up into the air? He thought about telling her that Aaron was his best friend and also a Makar, which was a very big deal because it meant he was one of the few living magicians who could work magic with the element of chaos.
"School's okay,"
he mumbled, shrugging, not sure what else to say.
"I'm surprised you got in,"
she said, glancing at his leg and then falling into an awkward silence. He felt a familiar rush of anger and remembered exactly what it had felt like to go to his old school and have no one believe he could be good at any physical stuff. For as long as Cole could remember, his left leg had been shorter and weaker than the other. Walking on it caused him pain, and none of the innumerable surgeries he'd endured had helped much. His father had always said he'd been born this way, but Master Joseph had told him something different.
"It's all about the upper body strength," Cole said loftily, not sure what that really meant.
She nodded, though, wide-eyed.
"What's it like? Ballet school?"
"Harsh," he said. Everyone dances until they collapse. We eat only raw egg smoothies and wheat protein. Every Friday we have a dance-off, and whoever is left standing gets a chocolate bar. Also, we have to watch dance movies constantly. She was about to say something in return, but she was interrupted by Havoc pushing out of the bushes. He was carrying a stick between his teeth, and his eyes were wide and coruscating, shades of orange, yellow, and hellfire red. As Kylie stared, her own eyes popping, Cole realized how huge Havoc must look to her, how very obviously not a dog or any kind of normal pet he was. Kylie screamed. Before Cole could say another word, she bolted out of the yard and tore down the street, her white mop of a dog barely keeping pace with her. So much for making nice with the neighbors. By the time Cole got home, he'd decided that, between lying to Kylie and scaring her off, he had to take away all the good points he'd gotten for picking up after Havoc. The evil overlord Colum was winning the day.
"Is everything all right?"
his father asked, seeing the look on Cole's face as he closed the door. "Yeah, fine," Cole said dejectedly.
"Good."
Alistair cleared his throat.
"I thought we might go out this evening," he said. "To the cinema."
Cole was startled. They hadn't done much since he'd come back for the summer. Alistair, day after day, seeming sunken in gloom, had been wearing a path from the TV room to the garage, where he fixed up old cars and made them shine like new, then sold them to collectors. Sometimes Cole grabbed his skateboard and skated half-heartedly around the town, but nothing seemed like much fun compared to the Magisterium. He'd even started missing the Lycan. "What movie do you want to see?" Cole asked, figuring that evil overlords didn't consider the movie choices of others. That had to count for something.
"There's a new one, with spaceships,"
his dad said, surprising Cole with his choice.
"And perhaps we could drop that monster of yours at the pound on the way, trade it in for a nice poodle. Or even a pit bull. Anything not rabid."
Havoc looked up at Alistair balefully, his eerie eyes swirling with color. Cole thought of Kylie's wig dog. "He's not rabid," Cole said, rubbing Havoc's neck rough. The wolf slid down and rolled on his back, tongue lolling, so Cole could scratch his belly. "Can he come? He could wait for us in the car with the windows down." Frowning, Alistair shook his head.
"Absolutely not. Tie it up out in the garage."
"He's not an it, and I bet he'd like popcorn," Cole said, "and gummy worms." Alistair checked his watch, then pointed to the garage.
"Well, perhaps you can bring some back for it."
"Him." With a sigh, Cole led Havoc out into Alistair's workshop in the garage. It was a big space, bigger than the largest room in the house, and it smelled of oil and gasoline and old wood. The chassis of a Citroën rested on blocks, tires missing and seats removed. Stacks of yellowed repair manuals were piled up on antique stools, while headlights dangled down from the rafters. A coil of rope hung above an assortment of wrenches. Cole used the rope to fasten a loose knot around the wolf's collar. He knelt down in front of Havoc.
"We'll be back at school soon," he whispered, "with Tamara and Aaron, and then everything will go back to normal."
The dog whined like he understood, like he missed the Magisterium as much as Cole did. Cole had a hard time keeping his mind on the movie, despite the spaceships, aliens, and explosions. He kept thinking about the way they watched movies at the Magisterium, with an air mage projecting the images onto a cave wall. Because the movies were controlled by the mages, anything could happen in them. He'd seen Star Wars with six different endings, and movies where the kids from the Magisterium were projected onto the screen, fighting monsters, flying cars, and turning into superheroes. In comparison, this movie seemed a little flat. Call concentrated on the parts he would have done differently as he downed 3 extreme sour apple slushies and 2 large tubs of buttered popcorn. Alistair stared at the screen with an expression of mild horror, not even turning when Call offered him some peanut clusters. As a consequence of having to eat all the snacks himself, Call was buzzing with sugar by the time they got back to Alistair's car.
"Did you like it?" Alistair asked.
"It was pretty good," Call said, not wanting Alistair to feel like he didn't appreciate his dad dragging himself to a movie he would never have gone to see on his own. "The part where the space station blew up was awesome." There was a silence, not quite long enough to be uncomfortable, before Alistair spoke again.
"You know, there's no reason for you to go back to the Magisterium. You've learned the basics. You could practice here, with me."
Call felt his heart sink. They'd had this conversation, or variations of it, 100 times already, and it never went well.
"I think I should probably go back," Call said as neutrally as possible. "I already went through the first gate, so I should finish what I started."
Alistair's expression darkened.
"It's not good for children to be underground, kept in the dark like worms. Your skin growing pale and gray, your vitamin D levels dropping, the vitality leaching from your body.
Do I look gray?"
Call rarely paid attention to his appearance beyond the basics, making sure his pants weren't inside out and his hair wasn't sticking up, but being gray sounded bad. He cast a surreptitious glance at his hand, but it still appeared to be its usual pinky beige color. Alistair was gripping the wheel in frustration as they turned onto their street.
"What is it about that school that you like?"
"What did you like about it?" Call demanded. "You went there, and I know you didn't hate every minute. You met Mom there."
"Yes,"
Alistair said.
"I had friends there. That was what I liked about it."
It was the first time Call could remember him saying he'd liked anything about Mage School.
"I have friends there too," said Call. "I don't have any here, but I do there."
"All the friends I went to school with are dead now, Call," said Alistair,
and Call felt the hair rise up on the back of his neck. He thought of Aaron, Tamara, and Celia, then had to stop. It was too awful. Not just the idea of them dying, but the idea of them dying because of him, because of his secret, the evil inside him.
"Stop," Call told himself.
They were back at their house now. Something about it looked wrong to Call. Off. Call stared for a minute before he realized what it was. He'd left the garage door closed, Havoc tied up inside, but now it was open. A big, black square.
"Havoc!"
Call grabbed at the door handle and half fell out onto the pavement, his weak leg twanging. He could hear his father calling his name, but he didn't care. He half limped, half ran to the garage. The rope was still there, but one end of it was frayed, as though sawed through by a knife or a sharp wolf tooth. Call tried to imagine Havoc all alone in the garage, in the dark, barking and waiting for Call to answer. Call started to feel cold all through his chest. Havoc hadn't been tied up a lot at Alistair's, and it had probably freaked him out. Maybe he'd chewed the rope and thrown himself against the door until it opened.
"Havoc!"
Call called again, louder.
"Havoc, we're home! You can come back now!"
He whirled around, but the wolf didn't come out of the bushes, didn't emerge from the shadows that were starting to gather between the trees.
It was getting late.
Call's father came up behind him. He looked at the torn rope and the open door and sighed, raking a hand through his gray-black hair.
"Call," he said gently. "Call. It's gone. Your wolf's gone."
"You don't know that!"
Call shouted, spinning to face Alistair.
"Call."
"You always hated Havoc," Call snapped. "You're probably glad he's gone."
Alistair's expression hardened.
"I'm not glad you're upset, Call. But yes, that wolf was never meant to be a pet. It might have killed or really hurt someone. One of your friends, or God forbid, you. I just hope it runs off into the woods and doesn't head into town to start snacking on the neighbors."
"Shut up,"
Call told him. Although there was something vaguely comforting about the idea that if Havoc ate someone, Call might be able to find him in the commotion. Call pushed that thought firmly out of his mind, consigning it into the evil overlord column. Thoughts like that didn't help anything. He had to find Havoc before awful stuff happened.
"Havoc's never hurt anyone,"
he said instead.
"I'm sorry, Call,"
Alistair said. To Call's surprise, he sounded sincere.
"I know you've wanted a pet for a long time. Maybe if I'd let you keep that mole rat..."
He sighed again. Call wondered if his dad had kept him from having a pet because evil overlords shouldn't have pets, because evil overlords didn't love anything, especially not innocent things, like animals, like Havoc. Call imagined how scared Havoc had to be. He hadn't been on his own since Call had found him as a puppy.
"Please," Call begged. "Please help me look for Havoc."
Alistair nodded once, a sharp jerk of his jaw.
"Get in the car. We can call for him as we take a slow drive around the block. He might not have gotten far."
"Okay,"
Call said. He looked back toward the garage, feeling as though he was overlooking something, as though he'd see his wolf if he just stared hard enough. But no matter how many times they went around the block, and no matter how many times they called, Havoc didn't come out. It got darker and darker, and they went home. Alistair made spaghetti for dinner, but Call couldn't force any of it down. He got Alistair to promise to help make lost dog posters for Havoc the next day, even though Alistair believed a picture of Havoc would do more harm than good.
"Chaos-ridden animals aren't meant to be pets, Colum,"
Alistair said, after clearing away Call's untouched plate.
"They don't care about people."
"They can't."
Call didn't say anything to that, but he went to bed with a lump in his throat
and a feeling of dread.
A high-pitched whining noise roused Call out of a restless sleep. He shot upright in bed, grabbing for Miri, the knife he always kept on his nightstand. He slid his legs off the bed, wincing as his feet touched the cold floor.
"Havoc," he whispered.
He thought he heard another whine, distant. He peered out the window, but all he could see were shadowy trees and darkness. He slipped out into the hallway. His dad's bedroom door was shut, and the line between it and the floor was dark. Though he could still be awake, Call knew. Sometimes Alistair stayed up all night fixing things in his workshop downstairs.
"Havoc?"
Call whispered again. There was no answering noise, but goose flesh spiraled up Call's arms.
He could feel that his wolf was nearby, that Havoc was anxious, was scared.
Call moved in the direction of the feeling, though he couldn't explain it. It led him down the hall to the top of the cellar stairs. Call swallowed hard, gripped Miri, and started to descend. He'd always been a little creeped out by the basement, which was full of old auto parts, broken furniture, dollhouses, dolls that needed repairing, and antique tin toys that sometimes whirred to life. A bar of yellow light peeked out from under the doorway that led through to another of Alistair's storage rooms, full of even more junk he hadn't gotten around to fixing yet. Call gathered his courage and limped across the room, pushing the door open. It didn't budge. His father had locked it. Call's heart sped. There was no reason for his dad to lock away a bunch of old, half-repaired stuff, no reason at all. Dad? Call called through the door, wondering if Alistair was in there for some reason. But he heard something very different stir on the other side. Fury rose up in him, terrible and choking. He took his little knife and tried to press it into the gap on the door, tried to push back the bolt. After a tense moment, the tip of Miri pressed the right place and the lock sprung, the door opened. The back of the cellar was no longer the way Cole remembered it. The clutter had been removed, leaving space for what looked like a very spare mage's office. A desk stood in one corner, piles of old and new books surrounding it. There was a cot in the other, and in the center of the floor, bound by shackles and gagged with a horrible-looking leather muzzle, was Havoc. The wolf lunged toward Call, whining, only to be snapped back by his chains. Call sank to his knees, fingers ruffling Havoc's fur as he felt for the release on the collar. He was so happy to see Havoc and so overwhelmed with rage at what his father had done that for a moment he missed the most important detail. But as he scanned the room for where Alistair kept the key, he finally saw what he should have noticed first. The cot, against the far wall, had shackles attached to it as well. Shackles, just the right size for a boy who was about to turn 13. Chapter 2. Call couldn't stop staring at the shackles. His heart felt like it was too small in his chest, desperately pumping away without making the blood move in his veins. The shackles were forged out of iron, inscribed with alchemical symbols, obvious mage work, sunk deep into the wall behind them. Once they were clapped on, it would be impossible to get free. Behind Call, Havoc made a whimpering sound. Call forced himself to look away, to concentrate on freeing his wolf. The muzzle was easy to get off, but the moment he did so, Havoc started barking wildly, as though trying to tell Call the story of how he'd wound up chained in the basement. "Shh," Call said, grabbing Havoc's nose in panic, trying to keep him quiet. "Don't wake up, Dad." Havoc whimpered as Call tried to pull himself together. The floor of the storage room was concrete, and Call reached down into it for a jolt of earth magic to break the wolf's chains. The earth magic, when it came, felt weak. Call's concentration was all over the place, and he knew it. He just couldn't believe his father would pretend to be sorry about Havoc being missing and drive him around, letting him call for Havoc when he knew the whole time where he was, after he had chained him in the basement. Except he couldn't have chained Havoc in the basement himself. He'd been with Call the whole time. So someone else must have done it. A friend of his father's? Call's mind whirled. Alistair didn't have any friends. His heart sped up at the thought, and the intense combination of fear and magic split Havoc's chains. The wolf was free. Call darted across the room to Alistair's desk and grabbed at the papers there. They were all covered in his dad's fine, spidery handwriting, pages of notes and drawings. There was a sketch of the gates of the Magisterium, and of a pillared building Call didn't know, and of the airplane hangar where the iron trial had been held. But most of the drawings were of a weird mechanical thing that looked like an old-fashioned armored metal gauntlet, covered with strange symbols. It would have been cool if something about it hadn't sent a chill of creepiness up Call's spine. The drawings sat beside a book explaining a weird, upsetting ritual. The tome was bound in cracked black leather, and the contents were horrifying. They explained how chaos magic could be harvested and used by someone other than a Makar, through the removal of a chaos creature's still-beating heart. Once in possession of the gauntlet and the heart, chaos magic could be pushed out of a Makar, destroying the Makar completely. But if they weren't chaos mages, if they weren't Makars, they'd survive. Looking at the shackles on the cot, Call could guess who was going to be experimented on. Alistair was going to use chaos to perform a dark form of magical surgery on Call, one that would kill him if he really was the enemy of death and possessed the enemy's Makar ability. Call had thought Alistair suspected the truth about him, but it looked like he'd moved beyond suspicion. Even if Call survived the magical surgery, he'd know this was a test he was supposed to fail. He possessed Constantine Madden's soul, and his own father wanted him dead because of it. Beside the book was a note in Alistair's spidery handwriting. "This has to work on him. It must." "Must" was underlined several times, and next to it was written a date in September. It was the date Call was supposed to return to the Magisterium. People in town knew he was home for the summer, and probably figured he was returning to ballet school around the same time the local kids went back to public school. If Call had just disappeared in September, no one would have thought anything of it. Call turned around to look at the shackles again. He felt sick to his stomach. September was only 2 weeks away. Call whirled around. His father was standing in the doorway, dressed as though he'd never planned on sleeping. His glasses were pushed up on his nose. He looked totally normal and a little sad. Call stared in disbelief as his dad reached out a hand to him.
"Call, it's not what you think."
"Tell me you didn't lock up Havoc here," Call said in a low voice. "Tell me none of this stuff is yours."
"I'm not the one who chained him up."
It was the first time Alistair had called Havoc a him and not an it.
"But my plan is necessary, Call. It's for you. For your own good. There are terrible people in the world and they'll do things to you. They'll use you. I can't have that."
"So you're going to do something terrible to me first?"
"It's for your own good."
"That's a lie!" Call shouted. He let go of Havoc, who growled. His ears were flat to his head, and he was glaring at Alistair through swirling, multicolored eyes. "Everything you've ever said was a lie. You lied about the Magisterium."
"I didn't lie about the Magisterium," Alistair snapped. "It was the worst place for you. It is the worst place for you."
"Because you think I'm Constantine Madden," Call shouted. "You think I'm the enemy of death." It was as if he'd stopped a tornado mid-spin. There was a sudden, charged, horrible silence. Even Havoc didn't make a sound as Alistair's expression crumbled and his body sagged against the doorway. When he replied, he spoke very softly. It was worse, in a way, than the anger.
"You are Constantine Madden," he said, "aren't you?"
"I don't know." Call felt adrift, bereft. "I don't remember being anyone but me. But if I really am him, then you're supposed to help me know what to do about it. Instead, you're locking up my dog and..." Call looked over at the boy-sized shackles and swallowed the rest of his words.
"When I saw the wolf, that's when I knew," said Alistair,
still in the same quiet voice.
"I guessed before, but I could convince myself that you couldn't possibly be like him. But Constantine had a wolf just like Havoc, back when we were your age. The wolf used to go everywhere with him, just like Havoc does with you.
Call felt a cold shiver pass across his skin.
You said you were Constantine's friend.
We were in the same apprentice group. Under Master Rufus.
It was more than Alistair had ever said about his time at the Magisterium before.
Rufus chose 5 students at my iron trial. Your mother, her brother Declan, Constantine Madden, Constantine's brother Jericho,
and me.
It hurt him to tell Call this. Call could see.
By the end of our silver year, only 4 of us were alive, and Constantine had started wearing the mask. 5 years later, everyone was gone but him and myself. After the Cold Massacre, he was rarely seen.
The Cold Massacre was where Call's mother had died, where his leg had been destroyed. It was where Constantine Madden had removed the soul of the child, called Colum Hunt, and put his own soul into the child's body. But that wasn't even the worst thing Call knew about it. The worst thing was what Master Joseph had told him about his mother.
I know what she wrote in the snow,
Call said now.
She wrote, "Kill the child." She meant me.
His dad didn't deny it.
Why didn't you kill me?
Call, I'd never hurt you.
Seriously?
Call grabbed for one of the drawings of the gauntlet.
What's this? What were you going to use it for, gardening?
Alistair's expression turned grim.
Call, give that here.
Were you going to chain me up so I wouldn't struggle when you pulled out Havoc's heart?
Call pointed at the shackles.
Or so I wouldn't struggle when you used it on me.
Don't be ridiculous.
Alistair took a step forward, and that's when Havoc leaped at him, snarling. Call shouted, and Havoc tried to arrest himself mid-jump, twisting his body desperately. He hit Alistair side-on, knocking him backward. Alistair crashed into a small table that broke under him. Wolf and man slammed against the floor.
Havoc!
Call called. The wolf rolled off Alistair and resumed his place at Call's side, still snarling. Alistair pushed himself up onto his knees and gradually stood, his balance unsteady. Call lurched automatically toward his father. Alistair looked at him.
And there was something on his face that Call had never expected to see. Fear.
It made Call furious.
I'm leaving, he spat. Havoc and I are leaving and we're never coming back. You missed your chance to kill us.
Call, Alistair said, holding out a warning hand. I can't let you do that.
Call wondered whether there had been something off for Alistair every time he'd ever looked at Call. Some creeping, horrible sense of wrongness. He'd always thought of Alistair as his dad, even after what Master Joseph had told him, but it was possible that Alistair no longer thought of Call as his son. Call looked down at the knife in his hand. He remembered the day of the trial and wondered whether Alistair had thrown Miri to him or at him.
Kill the child.
He remembered Alistair writing to Master Rufus to ask him to bind Call's magic. Suddenly, everything Alistair had done made a horrible kind of sense.
Go on, Call said to Havoc, tipping his head toward the door that led to the sprawling mess of the rest of the basement. We're getting out of here.
Havoc turned and padded away. Call began to carefully back out after his wolf.
No, you can't go!
Alistair lunged for Call, grabbing his arm. His father wasn't a big man, but he was lean and long and wiry. Call slipped and went down hard on the concrete, landing the wrong way on his leg. Pain shot up his body, making his vision swim. Over Havoc's barking, Call heard his father saying,
You can't go back to the Magisterium. I have to fix this. I promise you, I will fix it.
He means he's going to kill me. Call thought.
He means I'll be fixed when I'm dead.
Fury overcame him, fury at all the lies Alistair had told and was telling even now, at the cold knot of dread he'd been carrying around since Master Joseph had told him who he truly was, at the thought that everyone he cared about might hate him if they knew.
Rage poured out of him. The wall behind Alistair cracked suddenly, a fissure traveling up the side of it, and everything in the room began to move. Alistair's desk went flying into one wall. The cot exploded toward the ceiling. Alistair looked around, stunned, just as Call sent the magic toward him. Alistair flew up into the air and hit the broken wall, his head making an awful thudding sound before his entire body slumped to the ground.
Call stood up, shakily. His father was unconscious, unmoving, his eyes closed. He crept a little closer and stared. His father's chest was still rising and falling. He was still breathing. Letting your rage get so out of control that you knocked out your father with magic definitely went in the bad column of the evil overlord list. Call knew he had to get out of the house before Alistair woke up. He staggered out of the room, pushing the door closed behind him, Havoc at his heels. In the main basement, there was a wooden chest full of puzzles and old board games with missing pieces, sitting to one side of an odd assemblage of broken chairs. Call shoved it in front of the storage room door. At least that would slow down Alistair, Call thought, as he made his way up the steps. He darted into his bedroom and threw on a jacket over his pajamas, shoving his feet into sneakers. Havoc pranced around him, barking softly, as he stuffed a canvas duffel bag with some random extra clothes, then went into the kitchen and grabbed a bunch of chips and cookies. He emptied out the tin box on top of the fridge where Alistair kept the grocery money, about $40 in crumpled ones and fives. He shoved it into the bag, sheathed Miri, and dropped the knife on top of his other belongings before zipping everything up. He hoisted the bag up on his shoulder. His leg was aching and he felt shaky from the fall and the recoil of the magic that was still echoing through his body. The moonlight, pouring in through the windows, lit up everything in the room with white edging. Call stared around, wondering if he'd ever see the kitchen again, or the house, or his father. Havoc gave a whine. His ear cocked. Call couldn't hear anything, but that didn't mean Alistair wasn't waking up. Call shoved down his wayward thoughts, grabbed Havoc by the ruff, and crept, quietly, out of the house. The streets of the town were empty in early morning darkness, but Call stuck to the shadows anyway in case Alistair decided to drive around looking for him. The sun would be rising soon. About 20 minutes into his escape, his phone rang. He nearly leaped out of his skin before he managed to silence it. The caller ID said it was coming from the house. Alistair was definitely awake and had made it out of the basement. The relief Call felt quickly turned to fresh fear. Alistair called again. And again. Call turned off his phone and threw it away in case his dad could trace his whereabouts through it like detectives did on TV. He needed to decide where he was headed. And fast. Classes at the Magisterium didn't start for 2 weeks, but there was always someone around. He was sure Master Rufus would let him bunk down in his old room until Tamara and Aaron showed up, and would protect him from his father, if it came to that. Then, Call imagined himself with just Havoc and Master Rufus to keep him company, rattling around the echoing caverns of the school. It seemed depressing. Anyway, he wasn't sure how he could get all the way to a remote cave system in Virginia on his own. It had been a long, dusty drive home to North Carolina in Alistair's antique Rolls Royce at the beginning of the summer, a trip he had no idea how to retrace. He'd texted back and forth with his friends, but but he didn't know where Aaron stayed when he wasn't at school. Aaron had been cagey about his location. Tamara's family lived right outside of D.C., though, and Cole was sure that more buses ran to D.C. than to anywhere near the Magisterium. He already missed his phone. Tamara had sent him a present for his upcoming birthday, a leather dog collar and leash for Havoc, and it had come with her return address on it. He remembered the address because her house had a name. The Gables. And Alistair had laughed and said that was what really rich people did. Name their houses. Cole could go there. With more purpose than he'd felt in weeks, Cole started toward the bus station. It was a little building with two benches outside and an air-conditioned box where an elderly lady sat and doled out tickets from behind the glass. An old man was already sitting on one of the benches, hat tipped over his face like he was napping. Mosquitoes buzzed in the air as Cole approached the old woman. He said, I need a one-way bus ticket to Arlington. She gave him a long look, pursing, coral-painted lips. How old are you? She asked. 18, he told her, hoping he sounded confident. It seemed very possible that she wouldn't believe him, but sometimes old people weren't good at judging age. He tried to stand up in a way that made him seem extra tall. She said finally. $40 for one adult non-refundable ticket. You're in luck. Your bus leaves in a half hour, but there's no dogs. Unless that's a service animal. Oh, yeah, Cole said, with a quick look down at Havoc. He's totally a service dog. He was in the service. The Navy, actually. The woman's eyebrows went up. He saved a man, Cole said, trying out the story as he counted the cash and pushed it through the slot. From drowning. And sharks. Well, just the one shark, but it was a pretty big one. He's got a medal and everything. She stared at him for a long moment. Then her gaze went to the way Cole was standing. So you need a service dog for your leg, huh? She said. You should have just said. She slid his ticket across to him. Embarrassed, Cole grabbed the paper and turned away without answering. The purchase had taken almost all his money, leaving him with only a dollar and some change. With that, he bought himself two candy bars at the vending machine and settled down to wait for the bus. Havoc flopped near his feet. As soon as he got to Tamara's house, he'd promised himself things were going to get better. Things were going to be just fine. Chapter 3 On the bus, Cole dozed on and off with his face pressed against the window. Havoc had curled up at his feet, which was cozy, and also kept anyone from trying to sit next to him. Restless dreams flitted through Cole's mind as he slept. He dreamed about snow and ice and the dead bodies of mages scattered across a glacier. He dreamed he was looking in the mirror at his own face, but it wasn't his face anymore. It was Constantine Madden's. He dreamed he was bound to a wall in shackles, with Alistair about to cut out his heart. He woke with a shout, only to find himself blinking at the bus conductor who was leaning over him, his lined face concerned.
"We're in Arlington, kid," he said. "Everyone else is already off the bus. Is there someone here to pick you up?"
Call muttered something like, "Sure," and stumbled off the bus, Havoc at his heels. There was a payphone on the corner. Call stared at it. He had the vague idea that you could use them to call information and get people's numbers, but he had no idea how. He'd always used the internet for that sort of thing. He was about to start toward the phone when a red and black taxi pulled up to the curb, depositing a bunch of rowdy kids from a fraternity onto the pavement. The driver got out, unloading their luggage from the trunk. Cole jogged over to it, ignoring the twinge in his leg. He leaned in the window. "Do you know where the Gables is?" The taxi driver raised an eyebrow.
Pretty fancy place, yeah. Big old house.
Call felt his heart lift. Can you take me there? And my dog? The driver frowned at Havoc. The wolf was sniffing the wheels of the taxi.
You call that thing a dog?
Call wondered if he should mention the service thing again. Havoc's a rare breed, he said instead. The man snorted.
That I believe. Sure, get in. So long as neither of you gets car sick, you'll be better passengers than the frat kids.
A few moments later, Call was sliding into the back seat, Havoc hopping in next to him. The cushions were torn, showing the foam padding underneath, and Call was pretty sure a spring was sticking into his back. The cab didn't seem to have any seat belts, or shock absorbers either. They banged and rattled along the street, with Call being thrown from side to side like a pinball. Despite Call's promises, Havoc was starting to look a bit nauseous. Finally, they reached the top of a hill. Before them was a tall iron fence, the massive and ornate gate standing open. A neatly trimmed lawn stretched out on the other side like a sea of green. He could see uniformed people hurrying across it carrying trays. He squinted, trying to figure out what was going on. Maybe Tamara's parents were having a party? Then he spotted the house, on the end of a winding driveway. It was grand enough to make Call think of the manor houses on the BBC programs Alistair liked to watch. It was the kind of place that dukes and duchesses lived in. Call had known Tamara was rich, but he'd thought of her as having money, the way some of the kids at his old school did. Kids who had new phones, or the good sneakers that everyone else wanted. Now he realized he had no idea what kind of rich she really was.
That'll be $30, said the cabbie.
Can you take me up to the house? Call asked, intent on finding Tamara. She could definitely afford to loan him the money.
You've got to be kidding me,
the cabbie said, heading up the driveway.
I'm keeping the meter running.
A few other cars were pulling in behind the taxi, gleaming black and silver BMWs, Mercedes, and Aston Martins. There was definitely a party going on, people milling around in the garden at the side of the house, separated from the long stretch of green, by low boxwood hedges. Call could see twinkling lights and hear far-off music. He slid out of the car, a broad-shouldered white man with a shaved head, wearing a black suit and shiny shoes, was consulting a list of names and waving people inside the house. The guy didn't look anything like Tamara's father, and for a moment, Call panicked, thinking he'd come to the wrong place. Then, Call realized the guy had to be a butler. Or something like that. A butler who looked at Call with such hostility as to remind him that he was only wearing pajamas under his jacket, that his hair was probably still sticking up from the bus ride, and that he was being followed by a large, and unsuitable for garden parties, wolf.
Can I help you?
The butler asked. He wore a name tag that said Stebbins on it, in elegantly scripted letters. Is Tamara here? Call asked. I have to talk to her. I'm one of her friends from school and—
I am very sorry,
Stebbins said in a clipped way that made it clear he wasn't sorry at all.
But there is an event going on. I can check to see if your name is on the list, but otherwise, I'm afraid you'll have to come back later.
I can't come back later, insisted Call. Please, just tell Tamara I need her help.
Tamara Rajavi is a very busy young lady, Stebbins said. And that animal needs to be on a leash, or you need to remove it from the premises.
Excuse me. A tall, elegantly dressed woman with completely silver hair stepped out of a Mercedes and came up the steps behind Call. She flashed a cream-colored invitation in one black-gloved hand, and Stebbins was suddenly all smiles.
Welcome, Mrs. Tarquin,
he said, swinging the door wide. "Mr. and Mrs. Rajavi will be delighted to see you." Call made a break for it, darting around Stebbins. He heard the man shout after him and Havoc, but they were busy racing down the huge marble hallway, lined with gorgeous carpets, toward wide glass doors that opened onto a patio, and the party. Fancy-looking people covered a square of lawn surrounded by high hedges. There were rectangular pools and massive stone urns full of roses. Hedges were cut into the shapes of alchemical symbols. Women wore long flowered dresses and beribboned hats, while the men were in pastel suits. Call couldn't pick out anyone he knew, but he slid past a bush in the shape of a large fire symbol and tried to get away from the house to where the knots of people were thicker. One of the servers, a sandy-haired kid holding a tray of glasses filled with what looked like champagne, hurried to intercept Call.
"Excuse me, sir, but I think someone is looking for you,"
the waiter told him, jerking his head back toward the doorway, where Stebbins stood, pointing right at Call and speaking angrily to another server.
"I know Tamara," Call said, looking around frantically. "If I could just talk to her." "I'm afraid this party is invitation only," said the waiter, looking as if he felt a little sorry for Call. "If you could come with me."
Finally, Call caught sight of someone he knew. A tall Asian boy was standing in a small group of other kids about Call's age. He was dressed in a crisp, cream-colored linen suit, his dark hair perfectly styled. Jasper De Winter.
"Jasper!" Call yelled, waving his hand around frantically. "Hey, Jasper!"
Jasper looked over at him, and his eyes widened. He headed toward Call. He was carrying a glass of fruit punch in which chunks of real fruit floated. Call had never been so relieved to see anyone. He started reconsidering all the bad things he'd ever thought about Jasper. Jasper was a hero.
"Mr. De Winter," said the waiter, "do you know this boy?"
Jasper took a sip of punch, his brown eyes traveling up and down Call from his tangled hair to his dirty sneakers.
"Never seen him before in my life," he said.
Call's positive feelings about Jasper evaporated in a whoosh.
"Jasper, you liar! He's probably just one of the local kids trying to get in here on a bet,"
Jasper said, narrowing his eyes at Call.
"You know how curious the neighbors tend to get about what goes on at the Gables."
"Indeed," murmured the waiter.
His sympathetic look was gone, and he was glaring as if Call were a bug floating in the punch.
"Jasper," Call said through his teeth, "when we get back to school, I'm going to murder you for this." "Death threats," said Jasper. "What is this world coming to?"
The waiter made a clucking noise. Jasper grinned at Call, clearly enjoying himself.
"He does look a bit raggedy," Jasper went on. "Maybe we should give him some popcorn shrimp and fruit punch before we send him back on his way."
"That would be very kind of you, Mr. De Winter,"
said the waiter, and Call was about to do something, explode, possibly, when he suddenly heard a voice shouting his name.
"Call? Call? Call!"
It was Tamara, bursting through the crowd. She was wearing a flowered silk dress, though if she'd had a beribboned hat, it had fallen off. Her hair was out of its familiar braids, tumbling down her back in curls. She threw herself at Call and hugged him hard. She smelled nice, like honey soap.
"Tamara,"
Call tried to say, but she was squeezing him so hard that it came out as, "Oof!" He patted her back awkwardly. Havoc, delighted to see Tamara, pranced in a circle. When Tamara let Call go, the waiter was staring at them with his mouth open. Jasper stood frozen, his expression cold.
"Jasper, you're a toad,"
Tamara said to him with finality.
"Bates, Call is one of my very good friends. He is absolutely invited to this party."
Jasper turned on his heel, and stalked away. Call was about to yell something insulting after him when Havoc started to bark. He lunged forward, too fast for Call to grab him. Call heard the other guests gasp and exclaim as they moved away from the bounding wolf. Then he heard someone shout,